Hey everybody, this is Adam Sharkoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. It's Friday, March 15th, 2024, and this is episode 798 of the podcast. And, you know, not every episode has filmmakers or actors or what have you. Sometimes I invite musicians on as well because it's my show. Why, of course. And I love musicians, and I love talking music with them as a fellow musician. It is a thrill. And when if I bring somebody on who I feel like really has a lot to contribute, I just jump at the chance. And Brian Mitchell is such a person. Just reading a little bit about him, Brian Mitchell is well known in music industry circles and beyond for working with some of the music, with some of music's most respected artists, including Levon Helm and the Midnight Ramble. In fact, Brian, among his many projects, is in the Weight Band, which is they're definitely not a tribute band, but some of the musicians have played with Levon and the band back in the day during latter day incarnations of the band. And when Levon passed away, some of these musicians formed another band called The Weight Band, and Brian is one of those musicians. So Brian has worked with Levon, Bob Dylan, B.B. King, Dolly Parton, Little Feat, Roseanne, Cash, Alan Toussaint, and Buster Poindexter, as well as recording and performing his own original music. He's appeared on 5 Grammy Award-winning recordings, 3 with Levon, and 1 each with B.B. King and Les Paul. In 2015, Brian was inducted into the New York Blues Hall of Fame. His versatility on piano, Hammond B3 organ, accordion, various vintage keyboards, and harmonica, plus his distinct vocal stylings, have firmly established him as one of New York City's most sought-after musicians. Now, I just got to know him because he's come into the radio station where I work a couple of times on my invitation, and I've gotten to know, I went to see him perform with his own band in Bearsville, the Woodstock area, and run into him a number of times, and finally just invited him to do my podcast because he's such an entertaining fellow, and he's got, as I said before, so many amazing stories. And this is just a little bit. I could have used a few more hours. But if you can get a chance to catch Brian in any of the different musical enterprises that he's part of, don't miss that opportunity. All right, this is my conversation with Brian Mitchell. And I might just say at the very beginning, I had a little bit of a technical problem starting off. I didn't want to interrupt him. And so we missed a couple of, maybe a minute or two at the beginning. But this is basically the conversation in its entirety. And there will be no outro on the show. This is my conversation with Brian Mitchell here on Film Wax.
Some kind of artistic thing. She didn't know. I mean, she was, you know, wasn't her world, but she just thought she didn't want me to be a gangster hanging out in clubs right. And bars. So she took me for music lessons, art lessons.
So your mom, though, she noticed that you had some sort of inclination towards it first.
I think so.
And your dad was just not going to relate to that. He wasn't relating to that at all.
No. He did one time. He bought. He got Billboard magazine. He decided he was going to try to relate to me, and he looked at Billboard magazine. So the highest grossing artist was Barry Manilow at the time. So he said, "Do you know this Barry Manilow guy?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Does your music sound like Barry Manilow?" I said, "No." He goes, "What are you, stupid? Why don't you look at this guy? Look at the sales." And I said, Thanks, Pop. Nice try. Okay, good.
Right. He was trying to approach it from, again, the business yeah. kind of practical side.
Yeah.
Right. But it was like his sort of sad version of making an effort, right?
It was. You know? I mean, I kind of laughed about it. I was like, hey, man, he gave it a shot. You know?
Barry Manilow.
Yeah, why not?
Of all the, what do you, yeah. I mean, Barry Manilow, man.
Yeah.
It's so weird how, like, we live in a culture, though, right, where that becomes the most popular music of that time. You know, like, he becomes, like, number one, where we have the Randy Newmans. I'm not saying that they aren't hugely successful, too, but, yeah. you know, what the, I don't know, the popular culture, I guess it's always been that way.
Well, sure, yeah. And, you know, like when I studied it, when I became like, you know, when I heard this Randy Newman record, for instance, I mean, it wasn't about music business. It was just like, man, this is somebody that's saying something to me.
Yeah, sure.
Music's always been, I mean, you know, luckily I was able to make a living. You know, I'm still here doing it, but.
I know.
But I didn't relate to any of that in the business. I mean, it took me years to the business. I've done probably a lot of stupid business things. Over the years, just because it's that wasn't my concern.
Nobody was there to guide you. Even your dad could have, if he had taken maybe more of a like, okay, let me take this particular case study or whatever you want to call it. Like, you know, I'll take Brian, my son. He wants to do this, so let me see how I can kind of help him, you know, make it successful financially or something. But
yeah.
So, so your mom got you started or helped you kind of in, got you lessons? Is that what you said?
Definitely.
In the Bronx?
In the Bronx, yeah.
And so
Miami, we moved to Miami, Florida.
Was that?
We moved to Miami, Florida as a teen, you know, Miami, Florida, Austin, Texas.
Oh, wow.
Atlanta, Georgia. We moved all over the place.
How, like, how frequently are you talking about?
Every year or two, we went somewhere else.
Wow.
Yeah. So, there's a funny, ironic part of it is my mother was attracted to my father because he wasn't a gangster type. He was a businessman and he was the biggest crook you can even imagine. That's why he moved. I found out later he was always one step ahead of the law moving because he was always up to weird white collar crime.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So he was more of a gangster than any of my uncles in the Bronx. So, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
And he was good at, obviously good at hiding that. And
man. He was a very secretive man. And, you know, to this day, I don't even know exactly what he was up to. But he was always a few steps ahead of the law. He never even went to jail. But
did you?
Yeah.
So he was pretty swift in that way. Did you have siblings?
Yes, yeah.
You have siblings?
Yes, three brothers and a sister.
Three brothers.
And I was the old, and I'm the oldest.
You are.
Yeah. So.
Did but among you and your siblings, though, you never figured out more about your dad than he let on.
Oh, we had suspicions. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some things better left unconfirmed. But
you know, when he died about what is it 6-7 years ago, and I kept thinking I would have this moment with him where he would tell me, like I kind of threw it out there, like you know. He took all the secrets of the grave. That's just,
right.
You know, I thought I'd have some kind of moment where he goes, you know something, this is, I live this.
You're life. Right. Because you have like that aspect to your personality, which is, you know, looking for a connection. And you do a lot of that through music, by the way, but you also do it interpersonally with people. You're a friendly, warm guy. And then, but your dad missed that. He had that. That was not in his DNA. So no, that moment wasn't like important to him.
No.
It didn't see the point in it.
Yeah, he didn't. No.
You know? Interesting. And, but your mom, was she more like available to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's 90, 91 now.
Amazing.
She just moved back to my father died in Florida. But we moved her up here 5 months ago, and she's back in New York, and it's kind of she's in a senior assisted living place.
Where?
In Manhattan.
Oh, she is.
Yes.
Is she enjoying that?
She is. She went kicking and screaming, you know.
Yeah, right.
Italian family that I came from, you don't put your parents in an old folks home. That was their, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of stigmas around that. Sure.
Yeah, and I had to convey to her, like, you know, she's a social person, and she didn't know it. And now she's the most, you know, they love her at this place.
Yeah, right. Of course.
They say she's
Then
like
all of
a
a
movie.
sudden she has. Go ahead. I'm
Yeah, they
sorry.
say she's like a movie star because she's just got a big. She was the creator. I mean, she had to take care of, you know, her kids, but she's a very creative,
Yeah.
charismatic person. Yeah.
That's amazing. It's so great that I'm sure that was also a relief, by the way, right, to you and your siblings that she ended up.
Absolutely. Oh man, I mean, she was basically alone in Florida after my dad died. Nothing. And now she's just, like I said, she's the belle of the ball.
Where was she in Florida? I just have, because I also have, family.
Gainesville.
Okay. Tom Petty territory.
I'm heading territory,
Got it. And your siblings, you have like four, five siblings? What? Are they, any of them also in the music?
They're all teachers.
They're all teaching. Oh, that's awesome.
It's kind of cool. Especially because, like I said, my mother was not an educated person, but she just knew. So she pushed us and my dad too, you know,
Sure.
education is being something. And I was the first one that graduated from college in our family.
Did you? And I mean, when your dad was around, did they get along all right, or was it hard?
Not so much.
I'm sorry, and I don't mean to pry. I'm just
Oh,
trying to.
it's funny.
You
Oh,
let me know.
it's funny, you know. I mean, to me, it's part of who I am. There's no doubt about it. You know, I rebelled against my dad and all his values and everything. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of fun years later, you know.
Yeah, sure. So, all right, so let me get this straight. So you were starting to take music lessons in the Bronx as a teenager, right? Were you a teenager?
Yeah.
Or was it even further back?
It was probably 8, 9 years old. I
Oh,
was.
so really young.
Oh yeah.
And then you got the itch then, or
Yes. Yeah.
that young?
Kind of a classic thing, you know. When you know to move around a lot, I was a shy kid where I was always the new kid. And that first time when you're at a high school party and I play the piano and people come around and I said, "Oh my God, wait a
Wow.
second, I have
Yeah.
something I could work with here." You know, I mean.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was, you know, that made a big impression on me, I think.
Yeah, of course. Acceptance and
Yeah.
just, yeah. And then it's also something that's in between you and people too, if, not to get too Freudian or anything, but you know what I'm saying? Like also, like you got the keyboard there, which
Yeah.
also kind of separates you also socially, so you can be the entertainer. That's
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
so. And this was this in like the 70s. And did you what were you in the early lessons? What were you learning?
Classical music,
Yeah.
total classical piano.
Right. And then like that's got to be it, right? You have to start with there. Like once you've mastered that, or at least gotten like a real, I don't know, it once it kind of makes sense, I guess, and you get it and like you just sort of figure it out, then you can move on to almost anything, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
That's
I'm
my
glad
feeling
I did
about
it. I
it.
mean, yeah. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know that was, but ultimately, it was a great foundation.
Yeah, that's what I guess what I mean to say. Like, I feel like once you kind of get that you can kind of almost learn anything, but you have to want to. That's the other part of it. Was there ever a desire to become like a classical pianist, or?
When I went to school, I was still playing at San Jose State. I was playing classical piano for the first 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
So most of your teens, that's what you were playing.
yeah.
You weren't playing like pop or like
When I was
jazz.
15, I started joining bands. And so they were two different lives.
I
And
see.
they were pretty much different, completely different. I'd go for piano lessons. I was in piano competitions, all that kind of thing. And then I'd go play, you know, parties and things like that. And,
In
so I reached a point where I realized to be a serious classical pianist is a huge I mean, the amount of work.
Yeah, it, right.
There's no way I was going to do that. So
that's
I,
it.
Yeah, I had to part ways with that.
And then, of course, I could see why that would be complicated, especially because the piano ended up being this way of breaking into the social. You're so creating, helping to create a social life or smooth the way for you, because you're moving around all the time and you had Absolutely. To constantly had to meet new people and kind of ease your way into social situations, which is really hard and on the best of instances. But once you're like invited to something and you break out as the piano guy, you're automatically going to be like, you know, accepted and popular and liked on for that talent. I mean,
you know, I had a teacher that actually, since we were moving around all the time, there was a part of moving around and the isolation of moving around that I was getting into fights all the time. You know, that's all, you know, I'd be a new kid at school and some guy would look at me. I said, man, I'm going to have to fight that guy, you know? And it was, you know, I kind of had this. And well, I had
you were from the Bronx.
And
so
yeah, that was part of, you know, I went there. If I had to go there, I would go there.
I can imagine.
I had a teacher in the 7th grade who said, he just basically turned me on to like literature, films. He just said, he saw that I was getting to fight. And he goes, look, you're not a thug. You're a smart guy. And no one had ever made that as a thing. I mean,
right. Right. He saw that.
Smart
right.
guys were like nerds, you know?
Yeah.
But this guy was just like, you owe it to yours. And he started giving me books to read. And I was like, that one dude, man, changed my whole trajectory.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, man. And then all your siblings are teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. I know. It always comes up. I mean, it's always a teacher that, well, I shouldn't say always, but it's typically, you know, like that one teacher, you know, who just saw something in you. It's tremendous.
It was. I mean, I kept contact with him up until I was in high school. I would write him letters and just say, let sure. him know how I was doing and things yeah. like that.
Oh, you love the guy, probably, you know?
I mean, did, yeah.
He saw that in you, that something he saw right through you to your soul, which you didn't get from your parents. You know, you got other things from them.
Yeah, but I didn't. But I'll tell you, the door for me with him is he was the basketball coach. And so
amazing.
I played basketball. So I was like, for a basketball coach to say, read poetry and things, I was like, well, shit, the dude can play. He's got serious game. I went along with it, but I wasn't, you know, I was kind of like, I don't know, man, you know, I'll give it a shot. But I needed his respect as an athlete in retrospect, you know? So it was just
sure. Fun. Did you ever ask him what he saw in you?
Not to that degree, no. I mean, years later, I always kind of wished I kept, because I am kind of curious. What made, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Just some kid, you know? Getting into fights, like, and he just took me aside. He said, "Man, you're not this guy. You're not a gangster. You're not a gang. Whatever."
Yeah, you know, yeah, I get it. Right.
This and all that shit. He goes, "You got a brain, man. Why don't you read?" And like I said, he gave me books to read, poetry books. And by the time I got to high school, I was pretty well read.
Really?
Just as a weird thing, you know?
Was that in Miami?
Yeah, yeah.
But what? Like, can you remember some of the poetry? I'm just curious. What do you might have given you?
Yeah, what was he?
Putting you on the spot.
Robert Blake. I mean, Robert Blake. What am I saying? Robert Blake.
Robert Blake.
William Blake.
Robert Blake. William Blake.
Robert Blake, the actor, though. Was.
Yeah, yes. Robert Blake. He was a great poet. William Blake, yes.
William Blake. So things like that, you know.
Yeah.
And
I'm editing that part. Why not? That's why I have editing available. So say it again anyway.
Well,
so I'll ask again. Like, so what, so do you remember any of the poets that he,
William Blake was something that he gave to me.
Billy Blake, one of the greats.
Yes.
Totally.
Which I dug the artwork too. And the,
yeah.
All that he gave me, I related to that, visuals and words, and it made an impression on me.
How did you maintain, like, moving from Miami? Me too, like you said, Austin to Atlanta. How did you maintain the music, like the discipline and practicing? And did you still continue when you moved around finding new teachers? Did you have, well, how'd you do it?
I frankly
Did you have a keyboard?
Yeah, I would always, well, we always had a piano in our house.
Really?
So when we would move somewhere different, they'd find my, I guess my mother would find a piano teacher. And so I
Okay.
just, yeah, always kind of touch base with that.
Any of those teachers also particularly stand out, or
Not actually, not really.
you
No.
know, classical teachers. I know
Yeah,
I
I
had
didn't
to
have a lot of luck with the classical world. Some of them were
thank
not
to our great, you know, fortune that
very.
you didn't end up in the classical world, although you might have also turned out to be a star of the classical piano. But we're all of us that love your music and who enjoy watching you and hearing you play are very grateful that that didn't work out.
Yeah, it was for the best, I think.
So,
There was some very discouraging teachers, really. I'll give you
they
an
said, "You're a thug. You don't belong.
example. Yeah, there's
You don't belong. What are
that.
you doing in classical music lessons? You should be out fighting people."
I was playing Beethoven,
Yeah.
and there was the cadenza, which is the part where you improvise. And I had read about it, and so I improvised the cadenza. But in classical music, it's written out. And so my teacher was just like, Beethoven wrote out a cadenza and says, but I said, well, but isn't a cadenza supposed to be you express yourself? He goes, do you know better than Beethoven? And I was like, and at a very early age, I said, yeah, I got my own thing, man. Yeah,
Good.
I don't care. Beethoven's great, but I can't be Beethoven. And it was kind of a, I got hip to that idea at a pretty early age. Like, you're not going to make me into Beethoven. It just sounds ridiculous to me. So,
Yeah. So talk about now, if you could, what you can remember from those earliest influences that were obviously coming in from rock, I'm guessing, and maybe some blues. I don't know. What were those? Can you remember some of those earliest influences?
sure. It was, I saw a concert for Bangladesh, the movie.
Yeah.
I was a Beatles fan, and I saw Leon Russell and Billy Preston, and it
Wow.
just changed my life. I said, because
Yeah.
I play piano, but I didn't relate to it. And I said, man, I couldn't take my eyes off those guys. They stole the show in that movie, as far as I was concerned. And so I was obsessed with the two of them.
Yeah.
And then it veered off to their various, but
Those.
it made a big impression on me, that particular movie, and seeing The Last Waltz at the
Sure.
event, and seeing Dr. John. He stood out to me. I didn't know what that music was, and I said, man, I want to know about that. It was so out of my cultural reference. I never heard that kind of music growing. I grew up with Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. I didn't have
At
Professor
all. Yeah,
Longhair and
right.
Dr. John, all that kind of stuff. I didn't know
You had
about
no
that.
control over the radio dial
None.
or the record player?
I
No.
guess not. No.
I mean, that's true. I mean, people don't realize just how steeped in like the Italian American culture families, like growing up in a family like that
I never
in the boroughs, like you just you there's no other, it's not like you had other options. You just that was your that was the milieu, that was the, you know, culture what you grew up in, and it wasn't like you're thinking, oh, let me explore other things, right? Everybody, that's what they listened to. It was the soundtrack of your streets and of the apartment or the house where you grew up.
Yeah, but I think it was like when I discovered that music, then I started discovering music. Like I was just like,
Right.
where Leon Russell, like where he's got this bluesy thing that was really cool. Then I discovered blues and some country music through him, and Billy Preston, gospel music and rock and roll, and then I sought music out. I lived at Tower Records. I read.
Yeah.
Records and liner notes and discover, then it was off to the races.
You caught the bug.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Which, and then you say Tower Records. Now I get it. Which city are you talking about?
San Jose.
Oh.
San Jose State, they had a Tower Records, and I was
San
there.
Jose. So really, San Jose. Also, you really did move around.
San Jose too
Yeah.
was this was
All
during
for it.
Silicon Valley. The early 80s.
Right.
There was the tech revolution, and I just happened to be there. And it was kind of an interesting time.
How did that impact anything, though, in your life?
I got really into electronic music and computers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, people that know me these days don't realize, but I got very interested in the technical side of things. And it's somewhere in my back. It is. It's still there. But then I got into roots music and that kind of thing. But I was hanging out with some serious tech heads at that time, you know?
Really? This this is the part where you never see it coming, you know? It's part of the conversation where something comes out of left field totally. So you were around all these techie guys, obviously, growing up, or all this period of your time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Was in the 80s by now or what?
It was the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah. So just socially, you would get to know people, you met these guys, and then you were had talent in the music. And so you would just sort of, the sense was like, what can we do together?
Yeah, well, I brought my things to the table.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I had an interest in roots music, but I loved people abstract electronic music. It just, you know, and, you know, as we've talked some about film and film music,
that's I got true.
That too. And so that got into my personality.
Right. Felt like, are you like what comes to mind? I'm just trying to think of like maybe some composers that may have been playing a similar type of thing. Not like Philip Glass, maybe, but.
Well, no, I was listening to Philip Glass at that time.
Okay. All right.
And some other, let me try to think of, you know, there were a lot of electronic music that was going on, improv.
Yeah, sure. I know.
In the West Coast. So I was drawing on, and it, actually a lot of improvised music that I was doing out there. You know, there were two things. I was the guy that I would play with, improvise with a lot of different musicians. I just happened to be a little more on the rootsy side of things.
Sure.
But we'd show up and play anything, make it happen, you know?
Yeah. So I'm wondering like how that part of your talent or your experience influences the rest of your music. Like, does it help in terms of when you are just improvising?
Yeah. I mean, anyone that knows me knows, especially that plays in bands with me, I'm very into spontaneity. That's, I don't care what kind of music I'm doing. I like to always throw some new, you know, I'm always doing it. So I never, you know, I don't like playing the same thing the same way. It's, you know, some people drives them crazy, but that's my person. That's just how I choose to play music.
Right. Amazing stuff. This is really great.
I mean, so, if you check out Garth Hudson, for instance, and his contributions in the band, he's a classic improviser. I've studied a lot of that music. He never played the same thing the same way ever. And so I relate to that.
Quite a bit, you know. Yeah. Well, I mean, the band, you know, since you brought it up, and of course, you play you played with Levon.
Yeah.
And then now the Weight Band, which is an interesting, you know, band to like I it's not a tribute band by, but it's you have original music, but it's like, how would you describe it then? I'm at a loss. Like, I mean, it's just a rock band. It, you know, it's at its most sort of basic level, but how do you describe the Weight Band?
Well, it started out walking the line with the tribute band thing. I mean, we were playing music of the band, but we didn't want to be a tribute band. And then pretty
clearly,
soon, the music. And also, too, approaching that music the way I came from, even playing with Levon, we didn't play it like the records. You know, I learned that music and I played it, but I didn't play it like the record. I still don't. So that makes it a little different than a tribute band, which is fine if people that want to do that. I've got no problem.
Except that the audiences are the ones that always have the problem because they come to, right? That's why you kind of probably had to get away from that label. Because it's like the people that are paying for those tickets, they go to the pier pretty much, you know, like a carbon copy of what the band was doing. And if you stray from that, it's uncomfortable for them.
Yes, you know? It can be. Right? That way. Yeah.
They really love. That's the phenomenon of these tribute bands. I mean, it's you know, I struggle with it because I can, you know, I can definitely understand why what they're doing and what they contribute. And there are like now venues that play like 90% of the time, as you well know more than anybody. This is their
Absolutely.
bread and butter.
Yeah.
Because if you don't want to spend $1,700 on a Billy Joel ticket, you could see you could see the Billy Joel tribute, you know, band or artist, right? For 30 bucks, you know,
Sure.
nearby, you know. But I just don't know. I wish that we could just get like, you know, original music every night of the week, you know, like.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, like living in spending some time in Austin, Texas, like to fill in a gap that I just realized I didn't. My folks ended up moving. They lived in Austin, Texas, once I was out doing, you know, my thing. So I'd go visit them. So I was familiar with Austin, Texas as a place to just I would go, and that's a
Total.
big music,
Absolutely.
original music place. It's
Oh,
about
that I didn't know.
original music, and so
You
it was.
said original, not digital.
Original music.
Okay,
So,
yeah.
original songs, writing and being a songwriter. And so I picked up a lot of that from hanging out in Austin.
Did you ever write music?
Oh, sure. I'm writing all the time. In fact, I have a record that's going to be coming out that it was an interesting process. I just wanted to go in and just record some roots music because I hadn't really done a record like that. And then once I started going in, I started rewriting lyrics, rewriting chords. And then pretty soon they turned into my own songs. And so I'm going to finish it in the next month. And it was an interesting journey to do that because
Where
I
are you
couldn't.
recording?
I recorded some stuff at the Clubhouse in Rhinebeck and some stuff at Utopia.
Oh, Utopia. Is that in what town is that in?
It's
That,
Bearsville.
oh, it's Bears. It is Bears. Okay, that's what I thought. That's awesome. And you have like some friends on there?
Yeah,
I'm
basically,
guessing.
my guys that I started out that I played at the Tinker Street Tavern, Eric Parker, Carlos Valdez, and Ben Zwerin.
That's a great band.
Basically, they told me, they asked me to. I played a party there, and they said just put something together. And I called these guys. I heard about them, and so, and then we just that gig has turned into that. I mean, we're playing there this Saturday. I'm doing like a
I
party,
know, I saw.
and but they're a great group of guys. It's a great community that I can, you know. In fact, it's interesting that Eric Parker and I, because when I moved up here, a lot of people said, "Man, you should connect with that dude." And it turns out we played our countless records together. We were never in the room together.
Oh, that's amazing, right?
Yeah. So sometimes we come up, man, you remember that record? You know, we weren't in the room at the time, but we're on a whole bunch of records together.
Yeah,
So.
yeah, yeah. I'm just curious to know, like, when you just talk a little bit, because this is gonna, you know, that's always the kind of really exciting part of anybody's career is when you went from kind of, you know, I don't know, just playing wherever you could, whenever you could, to something kind of clicking and taking off, and where you started to really realize that you were making a, you could make a living at it. Also, I want to do want to know about how you ended up playing with Levon, because I don't know that part of your history.
Well, I did a lot of, I was, I guess, doing a lot of session work in the city, and
And that was just over, like, just, you
over
know,
time, just,
over time, just
yeah,
being playing lots and lots with lots of different musicians, the
right.
slow, that slow kind of evolution that happens with somebody who's obviously has a certain level of talent, and then, you know, continues playing and, you know, meeting people and opportunities begin to arise, I assume.
Sure, yeah. And so I met Jimmy Vivino at sessions and gigs, and he called me one time and said, do you want to come up and play with Levon Helm on a Saturday? I said, that sounds like a fun thing to do. And so I went up there and I played. It was his birthday, it turns out.
Right.
And then at the end of the night, Levon said, are you coming next Saturday? I said, I'll see you there.
Yeah.
And that was
That
it,
was the
man.
right answer.
It's just like that, you know, and then it just turned into all these other things.
So that opportunity. So, when, how did you meet Jimmy?
We
Just.
gigs and recordings sessions in the city.
I see.
basically like that.
Yeah, you start getting called in for gigs, right? It's that's a great. And what's like, do you have any like, I don't know, anything? Did you end up like on certain albums that really ended up meaning so much, a lot to you? And
Well, all the Levon records were, meant a lot to me because
I bet.
it really did, And but I played on stuff, I played on a B.B. King record that was his 90th birthday party, 80th birthday. It's funny, there was a time I played on that, and I played a Les Paul record, and there were a lot of huge guest stars. So if you look in the liner notes, you'll see my name with everybody. It's like good resume stuff,
Yeah, that.
but it was funny, a kind of funny thing. So I won two Grammys in that 1 year that I did both those records. And here's a my little brother goes, he said, at the time when he heard about that, he goes, "Do you ever play with anyone under the age of 80?" That's what little brothers are for,
Not if you can help it. You kind of probably just from those years in New York City, like just made so many relationships, I'm guessing, and so many con is and that I assume is how you met people like James Maddock. And like it's really amazing how just like the versatility, you know, of that you have. But that's because you're a journeyman, right? You've played with so many different types of people, and you, as you say, you're, it sounds like you're just really open. Is there any kind of thing you would just say no to, or not in terms of, I'm just assuming the quality is there, but is there any kind of genre or just types of projects you wouldn't want to do?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I mean,
You are.
I did stuff that I wanted to do, and a lot of people get to do that. So I just played with the best musicians I could, and if somebody called me and it was a shitty band, and I'd say no, I don't give a damn. I mean, I don't have four kids to support and everything like that, so I could just kind of keep freewheeling and doing what I do.
Yeah.
But I basically did, music that I love to do, and I was able to do that for a long time, pretty much. So, I like, for instance, I'll give you an example. Broadway never meant anything to me. I know some guys that do that, and that's cool, and you got to make, but like, never interested me in the slightest. I had some opportunities that came up, but I didn't
It didn't
interest me,
excite you.
not at all. So I had no interest. To some people, well, that could be a great gig because you can, establish whatever. I couldn't give a shit, really. I just like to
Yeah,
play.
and if it takes off, you know, you've got a gig for a long time. Long.
I just bounced. I bounced around, kind of a not a lot of strategy going on. I just like to play great
Have you?
music.
So, yeah. And so, for the most part, have you always had like once, like at a certain point, I'm guessing, I can't even guess. I don't know. But at a certain point, you just sort of w tipped over in terms of your, you know, I don't know, ability to make a living. And then has it been more or less consistent since then, or are there any like droughts?
There have been droughts, but I'll give you an
Okay.
example of something that there have been a few things that came up. I play a lot of different styles, and I play a lot of different instruments, like playing piano, accordion, organ, harmonica, things like that. But I'll give you an example. If I want to really go back to it, when I was 19, I played piano in a vocal class, a jazz vocal class. And one of the guys there said, "Do you sing?" I said, "No, man, I don't sing." He goes, "Sing. You sing, you'll work twice as much."
Wow, that's great advice.
And he, it was fantastic. I always tell younger people this because that one person that did that, and I was like, "Oh, fuck it, I can." Because he even said, he goes, "Everyone can sing. You just might have to find the right material or the idiosyncratic way that you do it." Like, I'm a stylist. I'm not a great singer, but
But you know what you can do with your instrument.
I know what I can do. I can, put
Right.
across a tune.
And by the way, your style, which is the actually it's your singing as much as it is your, you know, keyboard playing or accordion player that attra like compelled me or was compelling to me, because you know, you're so has so much fucking charisma when you're up there singing. And it's like you obviously mastered who that guy is who's singing. You know what I mean? That whether that's something you just ended up creating or if that was just super organic, it doesn't matter because it works really well, you know. And
it's just,
yeah, it's so enjoyable to watch you sing. There's such a pleasure and a joy there. It's like I assume you're feeling that way.
You know, it's yeah. After all these years, I realize I do have something to offer. That's my own thing. You know,
you definitely do.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like I said, it took that one dude, man, that one guy that said that, and I wish I could even remember who the hell he was. Just some guy. I tell people that all the time. I said, you know, especially younger people, sing, man. If you sing, you have more opportunities. Or you play piano and you play accordion, you have more opportunities.
Common, sounds like common sense, but it's, you know, sometimes you just need somebody to give you that nudge, I guess, you know. That's funny.
Yeah.
You've had a few people in your lives that have given you some great advice.
Yes,
so there's a lesson for people that are maybe listening or watching. It's like when you are given some advice, don't just reject it out of hand. Like, consider it. It's like, obviously, it could be an incredible opportunity. You know, amazing.
I'll give you an example of something that happened with me.
Please.
When I was playing with Levon, I had this circuit, dude. I was going to Italy a bunch of times, and I have my own music thing. And, but then Levon was, at the time, you know, his voice was going. And so we were all trying to chip in and sing some. So I had this Italian thing I was going to do. And I told Levon, I said, man, you know, this thing came up. But I said, if you need me, you know, I'm there for it. He goes, bro, I really need you. So I had to cancel this Italian tour. And I didn't work in Italy for like 15 years because I did what I thought I had to do. And I screwed up, let's say, a certain kind of thing. But it's interesting, after I didn't work for 10 or year, you know, I blew all those connections I had. And then I'm just sitting in a bar one time, and James Maddock, who I knew as a friend, but I didn't really know. He said, I don't know if you'd be interested, but I got this little gig in Italy I'm doing. You know, I don't know if you'd be. And I said, what? And that was 5 years ago or something like that. And I've been going there twice, three times ever since then. It was just kind of nice to like come full circle. Like, I did the right thing that I needed to do at the time, but God damn it, I still got to go to Italy. So.
You know? And right. Exactly. That's beautiful. You come full circle. Yeah. I noticed that I forget how he did it. And then Willie Nile is also, doesn't he go there also?
Yes, he does. Yeah.
So whole thing going on in Italy, folks.
I'll tell
My
you.
Parents. What, go ahead.
Well, a quick thing is, our synchronicity is the last time a year ago that I went, somebody there, because my mother's Italian, I come from that. So he said, have you ever been to the town where your mother's family is from? I said, no. And he goes, it is my dream to see you play in this town. You know, I'm well, very nice. Thank
wait,
you.
Wait, who said this?
This promoter.
Oh, okay.
And so I'll be damned if a year ago, last August, whatever it was, a year and a half ago, and he calls me, he goes, I have made the dream possible. You will be playing in Gioia del Colle in the south of Bari for your family. I said, what? This guy created, and I went to the town. The mayor gave me a plaque. It was just like the Linzoloni comes home from, you know, after all these years, and they treated me like a king.
That's beautiful.
It was really, as I'm playing, I finished playing, and there's fireworks going on. I said, what's the occasion? They go, it is for you. You have come home. And then the fire, I was just like, this is like a dream.
You're like, I don't know. So this little punk from Moshula Boulevard or wherever the hell you were from.
I know. And then check it, and screwed up the Italian thing 15 years ago. And suddenly I'm there going like, hey, man, sometimes life throws you some curves, you know?
Oh, my God. That sounds beautiful. I'm sure you were really blown away and very moved
very moved. Yeah,
that's powerful stuff. Life. I was just going to tell you, yeah, my parents also, they loved Italy, and they would rent a place in every summer for years in a town called Sperlonga. It's like a It's like an ancient village, you know, at like it's on the Mediterranean. I guess it's near the Amalfi Coast, not far from there. It's not too far from Rome. Like, you know, less than an hour probably from Rome is my drive, you know. But they would go there like every summer because they just loved being there, and they loved the Italians,
Oh man,
the people, you know. And I visited them a few times when they did that. I was there a few times. I just loved those trips, you
Well, you know,
know.
the stuff I do with James Maddock, we play smaller towns.
Right. Little festivals and little like
And
evenings where they're like everybody comes out and right, and they pull up their chairs
exactly.
outside of the piazza, whatever.
And you know,
Yeah.
that's not like playing, you tour the world. Sometimes you play these major plays, you might as well be anywhere. But when you go to these small towns, you really feel connected to the culture.
Sure. Right. It's
We're going back
beautiful.
there in May again.
Oh, that's great. Something to look forward to.
Yes, it is.
I should get you guys to come to Copenhagen. My girlfriend's Danish, and you met her very briefly, but yeah, we're gonna go in the summer, and just
Copenhagen is a great
it
place.
is a great city. I, you
It
know,
is.
I was there in the early 80s, or mid 80s, my first trip ever to Europe when I was still in my 20s, and I had this girlfriend who was Danish at the time. And I went, it was February. I'm not recommending February necessarily if you're going to Scandinavia, although it's not that different from New York City, the weather, but I went there, and you know, she broke up with me when I was in, so there I am, you know, walking the cold streets of Copenhagen, in my misery. But so flash forward like 30 something years later, and I went back for my first time this past last year in the fall for my birthday. And it was her father's birthday, my current partner, who's happens to be Danish. But once again, well, you know, if you've been around long enough and you're still dating, you eventually come around to the same nationality again, apparently. So anyway, but this time, this is for keeps, this one. And so we went back there, and I don't know what. Of course, it was September, wasn't February, but it was just like I fell in love with the city, you know, of Copenhagen. It was really beautiful and great. The people were great. The whole city's fantastic. And we ended up meeting with my girlfriend from 30 something years ago
Oh
and
shit.
having coffee with her. Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly what the lesson of that story is, but you know, live long enough and you can meet your old girlfriends, I guess, is my point. And they'll forgive you for your transgressions.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh.
Beautiful.
So, and okay, so tell me, so you, so, okay. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I guess I have a sense of like, you know, your journey. It just sounds like somewhere along the way, along the line, you just realized you were going to be open to what experiences came your way and opportunities came your way. It sounds like that somehow you figured that out.
I'll tell you one thing. Another interesting thing in this point in my life is I love telling stories. Just from like I've met a lot of pretty cool people, interesting people, and I've always said like sometimes people say, you know, oh, you made that shit up. And I said, no, you know something? If you hang around with some pretty interesting people, they're gonna say some cool shit. And so I do have quite a few stories now, and sometimes I find myself on gigs telling people love to hear stories about, you know,
Yeah,
specific
sure.
work. And so it's fun to recount those in a way. Like it's kind of coming full circle in that way. Like, you know, I have played with some great people, but I got good stories too from hanging out, you know?
Well, if you would be so kind to, if one comes to mind, I'd love to hear like one of those stories.
Well, I'll give you a quick one, that one that comes to mind.
Great.
A Bob Dylan recorded is a Bob Dylan session I did.
Who's this now?
I recorded but dig this. So I get a call to play. He did something in The Sopranos. He sang a Dean Martin song, and it was like a
Oh.
major thing, you know. And so even when I did the session, I played accordion on it, and it's him doing Dean Martin. It was surreal. It was
Yeah.
bizarre. I mean, it's truly bizarre. And there was time where I was sitting there going, this is amazing to, you know, and there were so many nightmares that I heard from people working with Bob. You know, I've just heard a difference. But I had the best time. I mean, it was just incredible. And part of it was, I think, when I was first a pro, they said, don't look at him. Don't talk to him. Don't do all this kind of, and I was like, well, shit, man. You know, I'm going in, down in flames. It's not in my nature. To, you know, I mean, you know, I just tried to be myself. And it could, that could go a lot of different ways. It actually worked out good, though. You know, because I think at one point I even, I guess you're definitely not supposed to touch him. And I was like, Bob, yeah. And I kind of hit him like, and he goes, yeah, man, all right. And he kind of gave me a little thing back. And but the funny thing, so here I am. So it's on The Sopranos, and my family in the Bronx, they don't know anybody that I played with ever, but The Sopranos, they know. And so, you know, so I do this thing and it's, you know, but to them, they're like, I don't know who this guy that's trying to sing like Dean Martin, but he's terrible. It's good that you got work, but, you know.
Yeah, but your association with The Sopranos for your family, of course, was everything.
Yes. So, and the Dylan, I'm a Dylan fanatic. So to be, to Dylan, from Dylan to like The Sopranos and all, it was like the perfect. In my life, I feel like everything, it was a convergence. Like,
you're right. Everything came together in that opportunity. That's fantastic. Yeah. And then didn't he do like basically like subsequently, or I assume it was subsequently, like at the like one of his more recent albums was basically a Sinatra album, right?
Yes. And so I feel like I was at the precursor to all
right.
This.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
It was probably was that like recording that song that inspired him to.
Could be. Could be, yeah, but
yeah.
And here's the little, like, again, I could go on and on about this one session.
Love it.
But at one point, he was having trouble. The third verse is in Italian, and he's just butchering it. It's terrible. And so someone said, "We need a translator." And so they get on the phone, and this Italian supermodel walks in to help him translate. And I said, "Now that's some rock and roll right there. Like, get me an Italian." And this beautiful woman walks in, and she doesn't know who he is. And so he's singing, and she's going, "You're terrible! Who taught you how to?" And she's yelling at him, and he's digging it. He loves that.
Yeah.
And the more she yells at him, the more he's kind of laughing. We're all just cracking up. Like, again, very surreal. Like,
it is. That's fantastic.
He enjoyed the abuse for that time, and I enjoyed watching it. Yeah.
Well, that has to be the top of the. In a way, like you reach the mountaintop with working with Dylan, and then Levon, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure. And it did feel like again a convergence, like to be from the Bronx to play the accordion. Dean Martin, I grew up with Dean Martin. That's what I grew up
right.
with.
Right, sure.
And here I am playing Dean Martin with Bob Dylan. I said this to one person. I don't mean it to sound arrogant, but I was the perfect guy for that gig.
I'm sure you were.
I was just like, man, you know, I relate to it on every level. And
yeah, right. Well, think about all the other accordion players called in to do a Dean Martin song that would have been put off by the fact that Dylan was doing it. But you were like, no, this should totally happen. He should be able to try to do this thing. And, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's art.
All right, here's the part when we talk about perfection. So we played this song 15 times, and there's a cadenza, accordion cadenza at the very end. It's out of time, and I bring everyone in. Return to me, man. And so 14, perfect. The 15th time, I go, and I flub the note. And then, so he chooses that take. I said, Bob, I could overdub it. You know, and he goes, no, why would you do that? And now when I hear it, it's a little bit of a flub, but it's got character to it.
Sure.
But I learned a little something, like, you know, it was too perfect every take. He liked the one where it had that little thing. And I said, man, that's why he's Bob Dylan, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. And there was another thing, too. There was another area. We did a few songs because he got inspired. So we did a Hank Williams song that was on another record. But one of the things he played, and there was there was nothing going on. He would sing and nothing went on because they said, so are we going to overdub a solo? He goes, why are you going to overdub a solo? And the producer said, because nothing's going on. And he said, well, what's wrong with nothing, man? I said, you're Bob Dylan, God damn it. What's wrong with a little nothing? And it, so, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Again, you work. If you're going to work with Dylan, he's going to do some interesting stuff. Whether you like, you know, whether you like it or not, he's got a special way to view the world.
What are we going to do without Bob Dylan in the world?
Man, how, I'm a huge fan. You know,
I'm not even sure that there is such a thing as a world without Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I know. He's
Bob Dylan.
He's still doing incredible music, whether you like it or not.
He's still relevant. He's not repeating himself. He's still living an artistic life. He's still, right?
I agree.
He's being authentic. Absolutely. He's still authentic. It's not all about everything being perfect and successful as we know. So it doesn't matter. It's a matter of the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I was going to say something about that. I guess I was born the year his first album came out. So I know every time they say, you know, Bob Dylan's 60 years, I'm old because I'm 60 years old.
Oh, I'm right there. Yeah.
Now it's 61. His first album came out. Oh, 61. You are?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, so you're born 63?
61.
Oh, you're born in 61 or you are 61?
I'm born in 61.
Okay. So you're old. 60. So I'm still the kid.
There you go.
At some point or other, I don't know, did you experience this, like where you're always the youngest in the room?
Absolutely. I was the youngest musician for a
always, long time. Right?
Always with the older cats.
Right. And then overnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
It flips.
Well, we have this kind of thing going now where, you know, the Midnight Ramble, the Ramble thing.
Yeah, yeah. At Levon's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it turns out, I guess I'm the old guy now.
Oh. So you're still playing that?
I'm still playing it, yes.
All right, maybe I should come to it then.
You should. But some of the guys had sort of, that are no longer doing it. They were like, you're next. You're now the old guy. They're going to get rid of you next. And I'm like, I don't think like that. Or, I mean, to me, it's still, you know, whether or not. I don't think of myself as the old guy. I still don't. I'm sorry.
No, I don't either. No. It just shocks me because, I mean, as far as I know, I'm still the same guy I was when I was 30, and I feel pretty much the same.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Oh, good. Two of us are in denial. That's fantastic.
It's a beautiful. Denial is a beautiful thing.
It is.
Yeah, take advantage of it.
Totally. OD on that shit. I realize, considering all that you've done and you've been through and all the different people you've worked with, that, you know, we've barely scratched the surface. But I, you know, I feel like, you know, all right, well, this was a good start. Maybe we could do a part two at some point.
Love to, anytime.
You know, I really appreciate your making the time and, you know. Yeah, I really appreciate your making some time. So lastly, the studio you're sitting in, but it's not part of where you live, right? It's a separate place?
It's now where I live.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
So you also live in the same space?
Yes, now I do.
Okay. It's all
I was living with my girlfriend at her place. That's what brought me up there. She hated Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And we had a place, and she said, you can have the basement if you feel like doing some music. And so I started coming up here more and more, and then I started bringing more instruments.
I see.
And then we reached a point, well, a few things happened. One, the basement keeps flooding in the old place. And I was like, I got to get out of there. And then a little bit was, you know, my sometimes getting up at 2-3 in the morning or not going to sleep and playing. Right. I don't care how cool she is. It runs its course.
Sure, of course. Yeah, it starts getting less romantic at a certain point.
Absolutely. The honeymoon's over at that point.
Yeah.
So anyway, so now this is, I'll have all my instruments set up and, you know, but the other house is about 8 minutes away. So,
I see. And so how proficient are you on guitar? And Is that a, and I think I see a bass back there.
Yeah. And
so you can get away with playing, switching off on.
Yeah, some, you know, I mean.
I mean, these songs.
They're all the accordions over there.
So I've seen them, yeah.
There's more than that.
Okay. Well, I bet over the years.
Yeah.
What's your, all right, let's go out on this. What's your most prized instrument? If you can even reduce it to one.
Oh, man. Oh, my Hammond B3 over here, which is Isaac Hayes's old organ.
No, come on.
I got it, man, I swear to God, I got it in Memphis years ago. And as I'm putting it in my van, he goes, "You ought to know that I got that from Isaac, you know, just because you seem like the kind of guy that would be interested in that kind of thing." I said, "Are you kidding me?" And, you know, yeah, Isaac Hayes's Hammond B3 from Memphis. That's my prize instrument.
That's amazing. I have one of his albums on vinyl downstairs.
I got a couple of them, yeah.
Well, I mean, of course I have Shaft, but I mean, shut your mouth. wait, what's...
Actually, I have the B3 because he went bankrupt.
Oh.
After Shaft, he toured with a 100-piece orchestra. And lost.
Oh, what a more! Oh, Jesus! What was he thinking?
Yes.
This is before he became a Scientologist.
Exactly. I think so. Yes. I don't know how. I still don't know what that's all about. But
no, I don't either. But I do know that when I was working at Sony Music back in the late '90s, early part of the next century, he came up and he did this like talk or something. I don't really remember too much about. But I went and. He signed my CD version. What's the classic where he does Walk On? I think he does like Backrack
On. Walk On By. And the,
Walk
the,
On By. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Hot Buttered Soul.
Hot Buttered Soul. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I knew that I was just testing you, and now I know you. You know your shit. No, so I had this on CD, and I have it around here somewhere where he signed it.
Oh, nice.
And he was a warm guy. Really nice. Very nice guy. And now I have also Hot Buttered Soul on vinyl.
Oh, good. Cool. Yeah.
You know, it's nice to pull out when you want to seem like you have cred, you know, street cred. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing all those great memories. And I look forward to it. So this Saturday, you're going to be at the Tinker Street?
Tinker Street. Yeah. And then the next Saturday, I'm at Bearsville Theater with the Weight Band. We're doing our...
Oh, right.
Yeah, we're doing... It's a tribute to Levon. And
are there any tickets for that?
There's a few left. Yeah.
My son's coming in again. He was just up here. That would be fun to bring him to something like that. That's a great theater,
it's
too.
It's going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be really cool. It's the first time we're playing.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. All right. And then, of course, the Ramble, you know.
Yeah.
We'll send them to your, you have a website, right?
Yes, I do. BrianMitchellMusic.net. Something like that.
People can Google it.
Yeah, you can find me. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I just heard my Spotify thing account is no longer there.
What do you mean? Not your account, but your material?
Somehow it disappeared. Maybe a credit card snafu or something like that. Anyway,
you're talking about the music that you have up there that you have to. Why do you have to pay for?
I don't know. I'm a little outside of my comfort zone with this.
Right, thing. Right. I understand.
Somebody just told me you can no longer get my stuff on Spotify, and just the other night, I looked it up.
They're paying you, I know, almost nothing.
I mean,
you're going to make, you know, pennies, but you don't need to give them a credit card, right, to get, unless they're putting money on it.
I don't even know what the hell happened.
All right. So if you're here, if you're listening in, maybe you can give some advice how we can fix this problem. Have pity on Brian Mitchell.
Yeah, please.
All right. Brian, you're the best.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. And
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, I you know, it's kind of getting late. I mean, well, not for a working musician, I suppose, but got to be at the radio station in the, you know, in the morning. And I'd love to have you back at some point. You've been there now a couple. How many times? You just one time with James? That was it?
And then with Jim.
That's what I thought. That's right. That's right. You came back.
Yeah.
We'll have you back in there as soon as as soon as possible.
Cool.
But that's great.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and have a great show at the Ticker Street. I'm going to try to come by. I'd love to go to that Bearsville show.
If I could put you on the list, I can look into it. I don't know what.
All right, we'll see. I know I wasn't even trying to apply. I was just kind of thinking, like you know, just in general. But if it's possible, that would
I'll look into it. Yeah, let me see what's happening.
All right, see if it's totally no bother. You know. I don't want to ever be a nuisance, you know, certainly not. No, I mean, honestly, seriously, whatever. I wasn't fishing for that, but.
Here's a quick story, I guess.
Please, another great anecdote.
So I'm in Minnesota with Levon years ago, and it's sold out show. And so I'm outside in the alley. I was, you know, whatever I'm doing, smoking or something like that back then.
Probably.
And these kids are hanging out. I said, you know, and they're, you know, they said, well, we couldn't get into the show. And I said, well, you ought to, you know, they're a bunch of kids and they're in there, you know, they. So I said, yeah, come on. And I took them in right off the street onto stage into like the guest VIP thing. It was just a cool thing. Like I kept thinking to myself, if I were those kids and like the performer, and so it was kind of fun to do it. And
of course,
the whole stage and they're like, you know, like that.
You gave them a great.
Yeah.
Thank you. I thank you for doing that. I'll say that for them. No. I mean, that's your mensch. Of course, that's fantastic. You gave them a great memory, you know.
So,
yeah. All right. So I'll stand out in the alley with my cigarettes.
There you go.
All right, man.
That's my comfort zone right there. Yeah. You want to go? Come on. Let's go. You know, let's bump rush the goddamn thing.
All right. Awesome. All right. Well, we're now, you know, we're now friendly, so we'll stay in touch. And if that turns out to be a thing, maybe we'll do. We'll be able to come. But you know, either way, I love talking to you.
Thank you so much. Back at you, so.
Thank you. Oh, actually, my son did see you, by the way, because I brought him to.
I did bring him
to the Tinker Street at that time, and he got to hear you play.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be like I said, Mardi Gras music. It's Mardi Gras week.
Right.
Fat Tuesday. Mardi Gras is actually my birthday, so it's going to be a whole, you know. This,
come on.
Yeah, Fat Tuesday is my birthday, February 13th. So
fantastic.
Yeah. So
happy birthday.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right, man.
All right, man. Get a good. I don't know. You're probably going to work on some music as well.
Yeah, we check it out. I got more stuff to set up. So
got it.
All right.
Enjoy that. Enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Yeah.